Well, happy Mother's Day to any woman in the room. We want to say thank you for what you have done, whether you have kids of your own or whether you volunteer here and you mentor, or maybe you're a teacher and you influence young people's lives. We want to say thank you so much. One of the things that we're going to talk about next couple of weeks is parenting. And parenting has always been hard, and it seems like parenting today is a lot harder than ever before. Today, it offers different challenges, maybe more complex or demanding compared to the 70s, 80s, and 90s when most of us grew up. So think of some of the ways that parenting is considered harder now. Like back then, we had very limited screens around the house. I don't know about you, but I remember growing up listening to the radio. Listening to our kids' stories being played, and we just using our imagination as they're telling the story. And in our mind, we're picturing what they look like and what the town looks like and different things like that. And today, man, we are contending with so many screens, so many devices, smartphones, tablets, social media, video games, other electronic devices that consume a lot of our time and attention. And managing screen time and ensuring healthy digital habits has become a major challenge for modern parents. How about this one? Social pressure and cyberbullying. And with the rise of social media and online communication, man, kids face different types of social pressure and potential risk, such as online harassment, exposure to inappropriate content. I mean, these are things that we weren't exposed to growing up. Like my dad said, hey, if someone picks a fight with you, you end it. And if you can't end it, you get me and we will end it. And that's kind of how I grew up. But it was a lot different than today, where you couldn't hide behind a screen back then. Today you can. Then you have anxiety and mental health. Man, before the 90s, man, it was really unheard of a kid going to a therapist. Maybe going to a guidance counselor was one thing, and that was more concerning academics and getting into college. But I mean, back then, it was a culture of brush the dirt off your knee and get back up. And what we're seeing is the culture is prioritizing therapy and medication. Now, look, I think medication and therapy are at times necessary things. But it seems like we're prioritizing those things over pretty much everything else. Then you got changing family structures. Family structures have evolved since the 1980s, which you have the traditional family with a working dad, stay-at-home mom, and today you have more single-parent homes, blended families, non-traditional parenting families. And one of the things that's very evident in our culture is fatherlessness is an issue in our culture. In fact, Mary Harrington writes in a reaction, back then, the father was a central figure in both culture and children's development. He stood for authority, hierarchy, boundaries, and individuation. He was both exemplar and competitor for a developing boy. And then we have a keep him busy culture. And there's a phrase in our culture that says, keep him busy so they don't get into trouble. And what this phrase does is it just reinforces getting our kids in so many things. We keep them busy so they don't get into trouble. And then finally, just there's access to too much information. And this goes both ways, man. There's an overload of parenting advice, information, resources available at our fingertips. And it can be overwhelming. On the other side, our kids have exposure and access to way too much on their screens. From ads, clickbait, ungodly influences, inappropriate images, sexuality, porn, drugs. And then overall, while parenting in the 90s and maybe the 80s and 70s had its own set of challenges, there's a rapid pace of like advancement when it comes to technology, changes in family structures, evolving cultural norms that have contributed to more complex ways to parent. And I believe that we all know this, that what and who we expose our kids to will likely shape what they believe and who they become. I believe all of us want to protect our kids from what they are being exposed to. And to go a little further, for those of us who are followers of Jesus, I believe that we want our kids to grow, to know and love God. At the end of the day, the biggest decision our kids will make is what they do with the information they receive about Jesus. And over the next 2 weeks, we want to provide hope and guidance on how to parent as a follower of Jesus in the 21st century. Parenting has always been hard, but not impossible. And it's very likely that our kids will not be exactly who we think they are when we're holding them as babies. It's very likely that our kids will become what they are exposed to, and consequently will become products of their beliefs and environment. And the challenge of the next couple of weeks together is to determine who we are as parents, because that determines a lot of our kids' identity. So the question I want us to ask over the next couple of weeks is this: is Jesus part of my life, or is he the center of my life? Another way to ask it, is he serving me, or am I serving him? In the Old Testament, God's people, Israel, would recite the Shema, and Shema is a Hebrew word that means hear or listen. And I want us to read this week and next week, and I think it really sets up what we're going to be talking about, because this Shema, the Shema, encapsulates the core beliefs of being a Jew, particularly the belief in the oneness of God and the commandment to love and serve him with your whole heart, soul, and strength. And this was one of the most important prayers one could pray, and it was memorized, it was recited, it was understood. And families would recite it twice a day. And instead of scrolling the phone in the morning, it was reciting the Shema. And here's how it went. And we find this in Deuteronomy 6, 4 through 9. Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your strength. These commandments that I give you today are to be on your hearts, impress them on your children. Talk about them when you sit at home and when you walk along the road, when you lie down and when you get up. Tie them as symbols on your hands, bind them on your foreheads, write them on the door frames of your houses and on your gates. In the Hebrew culture, there was a strong emphasis on teaching kids who God is, his laws, and the importance of loving him. Teaching was to be a continual process, happening all day long in various contexts. And really, it was like primitive homeschool. Like, this was the original homeschool. Parents were encouraged to talk about these commandments at home, on the road, when lying down, when getting up. Essentially, it was this all-encompassing educational experience, not confined to formal settings. So let me ask you, how often do you talk to your kids about God? Like, think about a typical day. What does it look like? Parents were expected to model the behaviors and attitudes they wanted their children to adopt. This meant living according to God's commandments themselves, demonstrating love and obedience to God in their own lives. And so let me ask you, is obeying God a priority for you? And then parents were to ensure that their children knew about the experiences of their ancestors and the miracles that God had performed. Let me ask, what are you passing down to your kids? And then children were to be taught to, they were taught to love and fear God. And the combination of love and reverence formed a foundation of their relationship with God. And let me ask you, what is the foundation that you're hoping to build in your kids' relationship with God? You guys have heard me say this before, that Tim Elmore has talked about the importance of the first 10 years of a kid's life. That the first 10 years that you have more influence those 10 years than you do afterwards. So our rule in those years is not to prepare life for them, but to prepare them for life. So how do we do this? And it really starts with prioritizing identity by doing three things. The first is that we need to take risk. We are tempted as a society not to take risk. We risk too little. Like, without a doubt, I know that my parents, my grandparents, my aunt, my uncles, I know that they loved us. I know, without a doubt, I know they loved us. But my parents didn't obsess about my safety, like in general, right? Like, we would walk a third of a mile to the bus stop. We would shoot guns. They would throw us in the pond. We would figure out how to swim. Punishment was staying inside. We didn't wear seatbelts. Arms were airbags. That's how we grew up. There's a difference between protecting and obsessing over safety. Like, my parents protected me, but they didn't obsess over my safety. It's wise that we protect our kids as we prepare them for life. Like, yeah, there are some things we do. Like, you know, we make sure they wear seatbelts now. We make sure they wear helmets. We make sure that when they get their mail, they are safe going up to the mailbox on a two-lane road. If they're walking downtown with friends, we make sure that they are safe. They know what to do. Like, we are making sure that they are prepared for life. But we are not preparing life for them. There's a thin line between protecting them for life and protecting them from life. Like, when our kids have no knowledge, they're not going to have any wisdom. And in order to have knowledge, you have to be able to learn something. You have to be in a situation and you learn what to do. And then when you put it in practice, what happens? You have wisdom. Like, there's a culture, there's a generation right now that there's a delay to own responsibilities. There's a generation that doesn't want to drive, doesn't want to have a job. They do not want bills. They don't even know how to pay bills. Renting, owning, dating, marriage. Like, they don't want to own those responsibilities. Rita Echenstein, a neuropsychologist, said in her interview with Abigail Schreier on why we're seeing a lot of phobias, anxiety in kids today. This is what she says. There's sensory deprivation. The minute the kid goes home from the hospital, they're in the car seat, facing backwards, the pristine nursery that's all quiet now. They're all using sound machines. They're not getting dirty. They're not outside in the dirt. They're not getting the normal chaos. And I don't know about you, but I think some of this has to do with our trust that God will help us prepare our kids for life. Like, if anything about being a dad that I've learned is that I really depend on God to help me. Because when I go to bed at night, I want to make sure that I'm able to say to him, I did everything I could to honor you with my decision-making and being a dad. That all of my decisions were to prepare her for life, not prepare life for her. Like, I'm reminded of this, that without faith, it is impossible to please God, because anyone who comes to him must believe that he exists and that he rewards those who earnestly seek him. A second thing that we need to do is let our kids sweat a little. We are tempted to rescue too quickly. And look, there wasn't a time where my parents did my projects. Like, my mom would make dinner in the kitchen. We all sat at the kitchen table. We had to show her that all of our work was done before we went outside and played. And we could not wait to get outside and play. So we were hurrying up, making sure it was good and done. My aunt provided her old laptop as I went to college so I could write papers as I worked full time. Like, I had to ride the bus as a senior when I was in a car accident. My parents were not giving up their vehicle for me not to ride the bus. I had to deal with the consequences. If we rescue too quickly, it will delay in preparing them for life. Like, I've seen parents fill out job applications for their kids. And when a teenager shows up for the interview, nothing matches. I've heard friends who are executives say that the 20-something new hire will request mental health days right before a deadline approaches. I've heard friends need to schedule appointments for their college student because they're too stressed to do it. Like a doctor's appointment, they won't do it. Parents have to do it. And I want to show you this clip. And this clip is a spoof on what we just talked about. That if we rescue them, we're actually delaying and preparing them for life.
Hi, my name's Todd. It's my wife, Tracy.
Hi.
Yeah. We're just here to talk about how amazing Timmy is.
He's such a great kid.
Man.
Like, when I get him dressed in the morning, he always has a smile on his face and sings his little song.
Adorable. Yes. Yes.
All kids are great.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Some are greater. Yeah.
Little man been good today.
We don't want him to have any sort of frustration that could lead into trauma that would...
I couldn't imagine the counseling bills if we made him do these things on his own.
Yeah.
So, you ready to go to work? You ready to get in your stroller? Mm-hmm. All right.
All right.
Here,
let's go.
I wish Mom was here.
You know, his boss called the other day.
Oh?
Yeah. Yeah,
what
yeah,
did
yeah.
he say? His boss is not very nice.
His boss is not very nice. And sometimes when he starts in on him, I just want to turn into a mama eagle.
Do you have those sales reports?
No.
Why not?
I didn't feel like it.
And if Kevin calls one more time because Timmy showed up to work 2 hours late, oh.
We walked him there as quickly as we could.
We did, all right?
He sometimes, woke up when he wanted to.
You know what? Sometimes the jogger stroller gets a flat.
What's up, babe?
Timmy, we love you.
We do.
So much.
We do. Are we the only parents that have had a child that hasn't done anything wrong?
Have a seat. Tim, thanks for coming. I'm just gonna cut to the chase. Your performance is all over the place. We might have to let you go.
You know what? I'm not having this. I'm calling my dad.
You're calling your dad.
Oh, it's my little buddy. Hey, Timmy. How you doing, bud? What's wrong?
I need you to have a talk with the boss.
That's your dad.
How dare you, sir? How dare you talk to a child like that? What kind of adult would talk to a child?
That's my... He is not a child, sir. He is a grown... He is a grown man.
What? He's what? Oh, do you even have kids, Kevin? I didn't think so.
Timmy got let go. At his job. We weren't getting him there on time.
And that's on us.
That's on us. That is on us. We've actually considered moving closer to potential employers.
Yes.
You know, it's a commitment we're going to make.
Absolutely. You know? And that's a sacrifice we are willing to make for our child and make sure that he gets to work on time.
Right.
Why are you so quiet today?
We're screening potential new employers.
Yep. I have an interview with a potential employer tomorrow, so fingers crossed.
Yes, yeah. You're going to nail it, I know it. And we're looking for things that just really fit into Timmy's lifestyle, you know? We want to be able to have that nap time.
Man. Tim, look at me. Look at me. Tim.
I'd like to see you draw something better. What were you up there in just words? That's...
We'll make it happen for him. We will make sure that his life is perfect.
Thanks, Dad. Yeah, I don't think this will be a problem anymore.
Take care, Kevin.
Sometimes I think he gets it from me because, you know, I'm a good father. It's who I am.
It's who you are.
It's who I am.
It's okay.
I'm going to call this company.
I just want a juice box.
I will call them.
I just want a juice box.
This is not up to spec.
You fix that.
We're suing somebody.
You fix that.
Yeah.
I think we're pretty amazing parents.
We're really amazing parents, actually.
Yep.
So as we watch that, I'm reminded of this. Do not be deceived. God cannot be mocked. A man reaps what he sows. Y'all, we need to be careful that we're not robbing our kids from experiencing natural consequences from their decisions, responses, and sin. God allows natural consequences for our benefit. All right, the third thing that we need to do is model following Jesus. We are tempted in our culture to model too weakly or too shallow. Look, if we're not serious about faith, how can we expect our kids to be? The fastest way to make following Jesus unappealing is to be hypocritical. Remember that our kids don't just become what they say, what we say, but what they see. I'm reminded of Jesus' comment about the religious leaders of his day. Like, this is what he's telling them. He says, Isaiah, the prophet, was right when he prophesied about you hypocrites. As it is written, these people honor me with their lips, but their hearts are far from me. They worship me in vain. Their teachings are merely human rules. You've got to let go of the commands of God and are holding on to human traditions. So let me ask you, what are you modeling? What is the depth of our prayers, maybe in the morning, maybe at dinner, or maybe at bedtime? Like, what are our kids hearing us talk about? Are we as parents focusing on the wrong things? In the beginning, we mentioned this truth. What and who we expose our kids to will likely shape what they believe and who they become. Are our kids being exposed to bad attitudes, over-sexualized images, materialism, perverted thinking, prejudice, racism, other values that don't align with God's values? Are we quick to give them screens and access to do whatever they want to do? And do we even know who's behind those screens? Are we expecting other people to fix our kids? Teachers, coaches, childcare professionals, church leaders, therapists. Abigail Schreier, in her book, Bad Therapy, Why Kids Aren't Growing Up, she writes this, quote, if mental health experts wanted to do what was best for adolescents, advising parents against giving young teens smartphones would be a no-brainer. Instead, mental health experts rushed in the opposite direction, embracing smartphone use, dismissing smartphones' impact on adolescent depression as exaggerated. Offering seminars to teens and their parents on responsible social media use, which is a little like drug counselors lecturing on the appropriate uses of ecstasy. At the beginning of our time together, I wanted us to recognize that the biggest decision our kids will make is what they do with the information they receive about Jesus. One of our purposes as parents is not to force our kids to love God, but to expose them to people and experiences that fuel their spiritual curiosity and growth. One of the ways we can do that is by exposing them to the joy of living with Jesus at the center of our lives. Like, as we look at the Shema, much of this is practical, but it required resilience. With Jesus at the center of our lives, let's keep focused on what really matters. When our kids get straight A's or threes, or when they lose the game, our language is that our joy comes from Jesus. We celebrate the effort, the work ethic, the character, the integrity they displayed. Our homes ought to be safe places for them to ask questions. Listen, it's impossible to have a relationship without conversation. There should be time scheduled to read the Bible and talk through what it means. A few weeks ago, Brooke reminded me about doing devotionals at night, as I had thought that it was getting pretty late. I thought she should be fine without it, and I blew it. And I needed to be reminded by my daughter the importance of it. One of the regrettable things that we can offer our kids is a secondhand faith, where their faith is our faith, not their faith. Another way we can do this is by exposing them to the presence and power of God through his church. Think of the things that are not optional in our culture. Maybe in your own family. School, doctor appointments, dance, sports, right? They're not optional. Even when our kids fight us, especially when it comes to the doctor or school, we're not budging. You're going. No questions. You're going to school. You're going to the doctors. But yet when it comes to church, it tends to be more open-ended. We may even ask them, hey, do you even want to go? The girls and I, when we're on vacation, we attend one of our partner churches because we believe it's an important value in our family. Something is missing when we don't worship and learn with other followers of Jesus. Like, if we often prioritize something over church, whether sports, lake, camping, sleeping in, rain, whatever it is, it reinforces that gathering with other followers of Jesus to celebrate his resurrection isn't a value. Remember, what and who we expose our kids to will likely shape what they believe and who they become. And that's what we're going to pick up there next Sunday. There's two questions I want us to think about. What do you want your kids to believe, and who do you want your kids to become? And number two, how might my life look like if Jesus is the center of my life? Well, let's pray together. Heavenly Father, we're incredibly thankful for an opportunity to learn more about what our role is as parents, teachers, coaches, mentors. Father, I ask that you will strengthen us, you will help us, you will guide us in making wise decisions as parents, as coaches, as teachers. Father, help us to leverage our influence in a way that we're not forcing our kids to love you, but we're exposing them to who you are. We're fueling their spiritual curiosity. Man, we are there to help answer questions. Father, provide us those opportunities. Father, I ask that you will protect us as parents, as we look to protect our kids. Give us the strength we need, give us the focus we need, and give us the resilience we need. In Jesus' name, amen.